Global compliance is a nightmare. As we try to scale Technori into other countries, for example, Medellin, I've got to find local people there who start a Technori entity there because we cannot run a U.S.-based entity in Medellin. And there are currency issues and there are many other things. And rather than me sort of stubbing my toe along the way, I decided I would bring in Craig Vodnik, the CEO and co-founder of Cleverbridge, a company that maybe can have a solution here for me and for Technori and all of our many fans. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
So I guess before we get rolling into this, it's obviously you guys handle a lot of different things, and I've got a couple of issues that personally I think you guys can solve, but why don't you tell people what Cleverbridge is?
Right. So Cleverbridge is a global subscription billing platform, and we provide a solution that helps companies grow their recurring revenue, increase their subscriber base, and do it in a very simple, easy-to-integrate way. What that means is we do three key things. You already mentioned one, which is compliance on a global basis, so we'll talk a little bit more about that later. The second thing is a subscription billing platform, so who gets billed when, how much. And then the third part is global payments, whether it's credit card, PayPal, wire transfer, Ideal, Konbini in Japan. There's many, many around the world. Yep. So we do all of those things in our global subscription billing platform that's easy for people to plug in.
So I read your website, and you've got a whole bunch of, basically it's a glutton of APIs that you guys are working with, and you guys can sort of thumb through and pick and play and put together the perfect solution for all of these different companies. You also do kind of a consulting on the side, I take it. So if I were to come to you and say, here's a couple of our problems, or rather you can come to me and say, hey, I see you're growing quickly. Here's a couple of things we would recommend. And then we also can actually fulfill them.
Yeah, we don't do consulting per se as a business, right?
Yeah, we're not I didn't mean you're actually running around doing it. I mean, like, I can consult with you.
Exactly. You come to us and you say, hey, here's what I'm trying to accomplish, right? I want to go into a bunch of these countries, and we can explain to you what the issues are. Generally, this is around a billing sort of opportunity.
I love billing, by the way.
Well,
I don't love billing.
Okay. You shouldn't, but it's a necessary evil.
It certainly is.
Like taxes, right? But basically what we do is we help people understand what the issues are that they should be dealing with around the world. So most times people come to us and they say, hey, I've got this product. I'm running into a problem over here in the Netherlands, or I've got low conversion rates in a certain country, or my subscriber base doesn't understand me. And so we help people to say, okay, here's what you should be doing. We'll give the information, frankly, because we know that it's really hard and complex to do. And most people don't have the patience or the time to really figure it all out on their own. Or even if we give them the playbook to actually build it, takes years.
Well, I think one of the big problem-solving mechanism this brings, at least to the companies sort of at our size, the startup companies and that sort, is that we can't really take the time to learn this in the midst of a growth hit. Like, you can't all of a sudden like, oh, you know, we're scaling quickly and all of a sudden we caught on in another country and we're going to start blowing up. It's like, no, we're not going to be able, we're just going to leave that there because we can't do anything with it and we can't learn how to do this quick enough to keep, you know, keep with the pace.
Yeah.
So you guys are really a great solution. If I could have that happen, if I was so fortunate as to have all of our technologies take off in other countries, to be like, listen, I don't even have to worry about it. Just go to Cleverbridge and they'll tell me how to solve this problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's usually the fast growing companies that run into the problems.
Yeah.
When you're growing fast, you're trying to do things really quickly. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. But somebody like us, we've already spent the time to put it together. We've created these economies of scale so that you can go global very quickly.
What are the three? So you obviously mentioned there's compliance and there's billing. There was a third one.
Subscription management.
Subscription. So, oh man, I can go all day on the subscription thing. So how many, I'm sure you know the answer to this, but how many companies, I mean, they subscribe to like a gazillion things and they don't use any of them and they don't use them properly. How do you guys work with subscription management for people?
So are you talking about from like your business of Technori we're using us, or are you talking about the consumer that's actually subscribing?
Well, it could be both. Yeah.
So for companies that want to use subscriptions or manage and have and implement a subscription system, they basically can connect through APIs, right? To say, okay, I've got my front-end interface, maybe it's a My Account, and I'm just using Cleverbridge on the back end, so to say. A couple pages are ours, but generally it's on the back end, so it's very seamless to the consumer experience. Consumers, on the other hand, end up subscribing to services. They may not even know that it's us on the back end, but they can basically manage through the brand like Technori their subscription to the service.
Yep.
So it's actually very seamless from a consumer perspective as well as from a from a brand perspective of how to
it's funny
something.
How that's, I mean, like, that's actually kind of changed over the last few years. I mean, I remember every single time you'd go to a new, you know, billing sign-out page or a new sign-up page, it always had, like, the prominent branding, and it had, like, its own unique little sign-out and all this other stuff. You guys have kind of gone the route of, like, we're the back-end power behind this, and that's sort of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no... Everybody's still implementing solutions sort of one-off, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's actually the way it should be. Whether you want to put in there, you know, Stripe or Braintree or,
sure. You
know, use some other subscription management system, you can do that. But it comes down to you as the brand deciding how much do you want to be a technology company trying to put all those pieces together, or you go for something that's more off the shelf and customizable like what we offer.
Yeah.
So brands have that sort of decision to make. And some companies are, you know, they're technology companies. So they say, okay, I'm going to do this myself. Totally fine. Others say, what's my core strength? What's the thing that I'm doing and I want to do really well at and excel at? I'm going to outsource the other stuff, whether it's HR, whether it's IT services, anything like that. We're just another one of those sort of verticals that people would decide to outsource rather than do it themselves.
What would be, so if I were to call you, I've got time for some free services for people. if people are going to call you up and say, you know, I'm starting a company, we probably are going to be operating in a handful of different places. Let's look at compliance. What are some tips that you would say first, right off the bat, other than sign up for Cleverbridge?
Right.
What would be some tips that you would give right off the bat to a young company starting up with regard to compliance?
So I would say first thing is a company that's just starting up probably shouldn't worry about it too much if they're just focused on the U.S., right?
Yeah.
So if you're really going to be focused in the U.S.
Well, let's assume that they're, I mean, they've started in the U.S. They're kind of just sort of gearing for that, the growth.
So,
they're hitting the growth.
Exactly.
Now.
So I think that's the perfect time. Yep. When people start seeing that they're getting interest from other countries, that's when the sort of second alarm bell should go off. The first one is actually taxation in the U.S., sales tax. How do you where is your nexus, right? Where do you have physical presence? And it's no longer just your physical presence. It could be you're using an affiliate that creates a tax nexus in another state that you're unaware of. It could be, and there's this law that's going to get overturned, but an economic nexus. And I won't even go into that because that's a mess. So that's the first thing. If you're going, if you're seeing, if you've got affiliates, first of all, you need to be worried about tax nexus around the U.S.
Yeah.
As you start going more global, when you see interest from other countries, whether it's Canada, whether it's the U.K., Australia, that's going to start to create additional problems that you should be aware of. And particularly around taxes, that would be the first thing. But the second thing is global privacy policies and data sovereignty issues. So countries around the world are starting to pass laws that say, I want my customers to be protected. I want, not my customers, my citizens to be protected. I want their data to stay within the confines of my country or my region. The EU would be a good example of that. And this is why Brexit's such an important thing. Snowden kind of elevated this to be a much bigger issue in people's minds. So there's a lot of different things that go on there, but data sovereignty is what I'm talking about there, to keep the customer data within the sort of walls of that country. Data privacy, what are the rules that by which you can operate with that customer data when they've signed up for your service? It starts to get really complex. And then throw on top the same issue you have in the U.S., which is taxation. How are the VAT rules in the EU changing? They just changed, by the way, 6 months ago. What's happening in South Korea? They passed a law that said if you're selling an online service or a digital product into South Korea, even if you have no presence, you have to charge 10% VAT and remit it to the South Korean government. We don't have a nexus in South Korea, yet we still comply with that law. Japan, 8% as of last October 1st.
So this stuff is super simple, and there's not a whole lot of things to keep up on.
Yeah, just call Ernst & Young. It's all over.
Yeah, right. And then they send you a nice bill at the end of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That is, I think, a great example of what almost every business owner, I think, is afraid of. Right. It's that moment where, like, I open, you know, it's always like I make a Google search. I kind of think I know what I'm looking for. And then boom.
Yeah.
This list of stuff. You're like, I'm not in compliance with like a half dozen things. Like, oh, my God.
Or even worse, you get contacted by a state's attorney general or you get contacted by another government and they go, hey, you're not in compliance.
Oh.
That's like the worst. Right.
Is that too late to call you guys then? Or is it?
Yeah. I mean, the damage is done. You've got a problem to solve. But from that point forward, you still have new liability.
Sure.
What are you going to do about that? So that's where a lot of companies come to us and say, okay, they usually, the good news here is that, we're all freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, it's bring us back in the house.
Storm clouds everywhere, right? No, that's not the truth. I mean, they're out there, but you have to know where you're going to get rained on. And the reality is that not all states are the same. Not all of them are very aggressive. And countries are sort of catching up as well. They're not, you know, they may pass the law and it's law, but they're not running out with a bunch of enforcers out there, especially across country lines for you to, you know, to catch you.
Yeah.
So you've got some time here to sort of figure it out as your business grows. I mean, there's only so many businesses that they can go after, right? How many agents does the state of New York have, for example, to go after, you know, up 10 million small businesses that might be doing business in their state? It just doesn't happen.
But you don't want to have all of these sort of red flags and little things in throughout your whole profile so that if something does happen or you do go to court for something, it's like, well, wait a minute. Ding here, ding there, ding there.
Well, what happens if your business grows and eventually maybe goes public?
You try to go IPO and then all of a sudden you've got a real problem.
Or you get acquired and the acquiring company or the...
It's doing due diligence and finds out that you've got all these little things
on you. Yeah, those are things that are going to come off of your sale price, basically.
Wow.
So it's a... Again, we're kind of... It's like the storm clouds here.
It's not that bad. The funny thing is, like, this is, and it doesn't have to be negative.
Yes.
There's the reality with a lot of this. This is what fascinates me so much about data, and also to some degree, which I mean, data is a huge part of IoT.
Yep.
But the fact that you can start thinking in your brain of like all these different trains, and if this happens, then that connects to this, and if that connects to that, then that connects to this. And each one of these things is just compiling data to tell you where to do this or where to prevent this or how we're going to, whatever, you know, keep you predictive on what you're doing. You guys are doing just amazing things. Like that's,
it's very challenging.
I would say
it's very challenging, and the laws are constantly changing. That's like the, in a way, that's good for our business, but that's bad for consumers generally and businesses, right? Because there's lots of new laws that get passed, and you have to be compliant with them. And in Europe, for example, you'll get generally 2 years' notice that the law has changed and that you have to comply with it. In the U.S., stuff happens overnight because, you know, somebody in Springfield says, "Hey, I want to pass this law to collect 8% cloud tax," for example.
That was sweet.
Then what do you do, right? Because not only did that law just pass and you didn't know about it, or maybe you heard something about it, but then it goes through the constitutional process of, is this really constitutional or not?
Yep.
And so you're in this gray zone for a period of time. And so I think that that's also one of the reasons that the states are not as aggressive in going after people right away.
Probably, yeah. I mean, there has to be some leniency in the fact that you're also dealing with small businesses a good portion of the time. And yeah, they go in and out of business and so forth, but you're constantly dealing with about 30% of your economy. It's just companies that are, you know, there for a minute and not. And how could you possibly keep them all up to date?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we haven't even talked about like all of the global sort of differences that there are. Forget about all the legal stuff. Yeah. The actual consumer-facing part to optimize not only the subscription part of it, but then the recurring revenue, the renewal of it, that's all on a very global basis different than just English language, U.S. dollar, and credit card, right? So that's another whole area that people need to be thinking about when they're considering going global or they start to see interest. You'll hear it from customers. They'll write in and say, "Hey, do you offer the British pounds, for example? I want to pay in my local currency," or "I'm getting declined for using my credit card on your site, and it's an American processor that you're using. What's the deal?" Or you'll get language. One of the best stories I have is we had a client that actually got it. They understood the whole global thing. So we said, okay, great. We'll implement our solution. 18 languages that we accept customers to subscribe and buy in from us. Half of them are double byte characters. So think Asia, Russia, you know, those kinds of... We're sending them these notifications saying, okay, here's another order, here's this. They've plugged it into their system, and they realized only maybe a month or two later that they couldn't actually process these double byte characters. And so they said, we need you to turn that part off.
How well did that go?
You know, they're struggling as a business right now, but it's not because of that reason.
No, yeah.
It's just that shows.
It's an example of an under, like that. You can't even call that. I was going to say, you can't even really call that an oversight because it's who would have guessed that? Like that's not even.
Yeah.
But
going global is hard. Yeah. And so I'm saying, you know,
I never would have even thought of that as an issue. Like that, if I had a top 50 list, probably on a whiteboard, like things we have to worry about as we expand globally. The characters of the names is something that would not have made that list.
And think about currencies, right? Yeah. You think on the surface, currencies is super easy. Okay, well, I'm going to accept British pounds. I'm going to accept Swiss francs and euros and all this stuff. That's great. But then what happens as the currency starts fluctuating? You might think it doesn't really impact you unless you're going on vacation there, but it impacts you every single day because either you're charging the customer a currency that they will pay in, and therefore you're taking the hit because you have to convert that over time, or you're saying, I'm going to let the currency float and your product price starts getting more or less expensive in that other country depending on what happens with the currency exchange rates. So it's a very currencies is a very complex.
I feel like we're going to have you guys come back on and talk just about global, like just as its own show, because honestly, like there's a whole bunch of companies at 1871 alone. I can think of about four or five offhand right now that are specifically jumping towards a global market. They're, in fact, the U.S. is like maybe the third or fourth on the market that they're that they're trying to capture. So I think the audience would probably get a whole lot from learning more about your specific global, you know, problems that people have to look out for and ways that they could solve these problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I've written some blog posts about this, and we've written them at Cleverbridge because there's the things we've learned. The example I gave you with the double bite. Yeah. I mean, I never would have thought about that.
Yeah.
And so it's in my list of five things people don't think about when they're basically deciding to go global.
You know, we normally start with sort of like the, hey, who are you and how'd you start your company thing. We're going to end with it.
Okay.
Because this whole thing is so fascinating. Like I never expected this conversation to go as far into like that as it did. Yeah. As it did. It's very fascinating to me. How did you yourself, like, get, you're the co-founder of this. How did you get involved in this world of world domination?
Well, so just kind of two parts to that. One is getting into e-commerce.
Yeah.
I met a guy playing softball. I just like playing softball, so I was out.
Who doesn't like softball?
Met
12
few,
or 16 inch?
It was 12 inch. Yeah, I got to play with a mitt. I mean, yeah. I'm a Chicago
mitt
guy.
I'm
but
a guy. I'm a mitt guy, too.
Yeah. So I was basically playing softball, met some people. One thing led to another. Guy one day says to me, hey, I've joined this startup, and we're looking for people like you with some technology experience, blah, blah, blah. So end up joining that company. That was Orbit Commerce in 1999. So that was my first sort of commerce experience. Continue on, ended up getting a job at a company called Element 5 out of Cologne, Germany, which is how I got the German connection. So I was based in Chicago. I'd go to Germany every quarter, drink the beer, eat the sausages, you know, and use my broken college German to get in trouble. Got to know the guys really well, though, because I wasn't your sort of typical American.
Yeah.
And what happened then was that company, Element 5, was acquired by a large American e-commerce company. And so we sort of stopped and looked around and talked to each other a little bit. Hey, what should we do next? Should we work for the corporate entity? Should we just split and go and kind of work at other companies? You know, what are our options? And so I got together with some of the guys that are now my co-founders. And we said, let's build a company that does it better than what we've done in the past. And that's what turned into Cleverbridge. And so we started, I was in Chicago, they were in Germany. We started global from day one. I was in my living room for 2 years, had a server in the basement. I was answering phone calls from customers. I'd go to Germany every 3 months or so again. And one of the things that was really key to us from the beginning is we said, we need to build this company global from the beginning, because otherwise we'll get tagged as a European company and have trouble in the U.S. or vice versa, right? No matter where you start, you'll get tagged as that.
Sure.
So we said, we're going to do it global from the beginning, even though I was the only one here. Fortunately, I could play a lot of roles. I answered phones. I did sales, you know, all that stuff. And so over time, though, as we became successful, we bootstrapped the company.
How big are you now?
We've got 300 people worldwide, 200 in Cologne, Germany, 100 here in Chicago. We've got a few in Tokyo, Seattle, San Francisco. And what one of our sort of philosophies was, we said, whatever we're going to do in the U.S., we need to be global. So as we build the U.S. entity, it needs to do and handle 95% of all client requests so that we will be perceived as American and not as, oh, it's we have to wait 24 hours for an answer from Germany. So that's why we've built a very strong presence in
Chicago.
That's
super smart. I mean, that's like, because that's a serious thing. I don't think a lot of companies recognize that it's a very serious thing that if you get branded, particularly in more so, I think, even in Europe than here, you get branded a certain thing and it's like,
Well, we had the problem, and this is why we did it. We had the problem at the previous company where it was 120 people in Germany. It was like 7 or 8 in the U.S. So whenever we were going up against our big competitor in the U.S., they would always say, hey, you don't want your tax money going abroad. You don't want, you know, to wait 24 hours for an answer. You know, you're not going to get the right people. You know, we're American. We can do this. So that was the impetus for us to say, okay, we have to defeat that before it even starts. And that's why we did global from the beginning.
Clever bridge. Very cool. Craig, thank you so much for coming and taking the time. I know you're a busy guy. You guys are all over the world doing work. We are going to have you come back if you were amenable to that to talk about the global side of this, because I really do think that that's a specific conversation. I'll have a couple of the companies I'm talking about come in here.
Okay.
And maybe we can have a kind of a panel conversation. I think it'd be really, really fascinating. The Sage Corp guys should be listening right now. But anyway, thank you again, Craig, for coming. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you a lot, Scott.
Where do people go to find out more about Cleverbridge and to read the blog that you mentioned?
Cleverbridge.com, blog.cleverbridge.com, and you can find us on Twitter.
You can find them on Twitter at Cleverbridge because that's how I found them and got them in here.
That's true, too. That's Craig 100%. Vodnik on Twitter.
Very cool. You can stream this episode and more on the WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. And please stay connected by following us on Facebook or Twitter and Twitter at Technori. Or you can follow me at Katoon on Twitter, K-I-T-U-N. Boom. That's a wrap.